You're listening to the What's Happening in Stage Lighting podcast with David and JP. They'll be giving you tips, tricks, ideas, news on new gear, but most importantly, help you create great lighting.
Welcome back to episode 3002 of What's Happening in Stage Lighting. My name is JP. I'm co-hosting with David Henry. And in this episode, we're going to take a look at planning and execution of your show. We'll be talking about a few new fixtures that have recently been released. We'll see how smoke machines and hazers affect your health. And if Chinese fixtures are actually worth saving a few bucks. So, we are back. This time I have remembered the podcast's name. So it's called What's Happening in Stage Lighting. David, how are you doing?
I'm good. Busy as always, but doing good.
Great, man. You know, I know you're busy planning a Christmas trade show for next week. So it's a bit rough. I know the days leading up to it can be quite interesting. Yeah, so last week I think we had quite a broad topic of different things we were discussing, and I think I'm going to change it this week to implementation to execution, where we start things off with how we'll plan a show, plan power, plan cabling, design your show, draw your show, and then executing the show. I don't know what your take on it is, but for me, I can't go into a show without proper planning. I'm like a planning freak in the sense of fixtures and modes and labeling and amounts of cables. And that's quite an important thing for me, because without that, I'll fall over on site. So I don't know. I wanted to find out what's your approach to planning a show, starting an art. How do you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, truth be told, like, you know, the beautiful thing about this, and like we were talking about before we got on the air, is that it does vary somewhat. There's a lot that's the same and some things that change, whether you're lighting for bands, for churches, for DJs, for theater. But regardless, no matter what type of lighting you're doing, there's going to be, set up at some point, right? You've got to set your stuff up, whether that be that you're setting stuff up for, you know, a permanent install, whether you're setting something up for just a show or an event that's for a short period of time, etc. You know, there's processes to get this stuff done. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like my personal opinion is that when you're getting ready to set up a show, like, there's a couple things people do, right? You know, the thing people do that we don't really want you to do is they go, okay, you know, I have these lights and I have a bunch of cable, maybe what I need, maybe what I don't need, and I'm just gonna show up with it, you know, show up wherever the place is and go, quote, make it work, right? And that's not a good policy. And you know, that, as we see from customers, you know, as well as ourselves, are that, you know, that can lead to a lot of stress, when you're at the event site or setting up, you know, a permanently installed rig or whatever. And so I definitely think there's a few things you can do as you're getting ready to do a setup that can really help you out, like you mentioned, JP. So why don't you go a little bit deeper into kind of what you mean by, you know, all that stuff you mentioned, fixture modes, addresses, cabling, et cetera, and how you prepare when an event's coming up.
I think the worst thing for me is getting on site and the communication is broken. So sort of this ties in a lot for me, where communication needs to be really good with the company supplying the gear or the lighting, if you are just a freelancer like me. I've had multiple events I would rock up to you and the lights will be in the wrong mode, or it will be different lights to what was spec'd, or they will be broken, or a lamp will be out, or whatever. So how I try and approach it is where I have direct communication with the person supplying. I would find out what gear is being supplied and amounts. Because most of the time, I don't really spec a rig. I'd be given, listen, this is what the budget was for. This is what we've got available. You can make your pick here, what you want. So I'd make my pick. I would go, if I don't know the fixtures, I'll go check out the different modes. I tend to not always use the biggest modes. You get some lights where you'll go from a 40-channel mode to a 20-channel mode, and it will not really do much different. Because I don't really need the fine movements and stuff like that. So I would then see what modes I'm going to use, plan them out, patch them out. Sometimes I'll even draw out a plan of how I want these lights laid out. And I'll also look at power, because power is quite an important thing where you are not overloading circuits or tripping out stuff or burning stuff up or possibly damaging equipment. And then also with the client, I think communication with the client is super important, because we are trying to keep them happy. So we need to see what their end goal is. So it doesn't help our spec a 24 beam lights where it's a theater show, because 24 beam lights in theater is not going to do much for me. You'd need some washers and some spots there. So that's really important. We all want nice and tight beams and pretty stuff, but does it solve our execution problem? Does it make the clients happy, and does it look good? So that's sort of the important thing for me, because I always see the communication thing going down the drain, and communication can be broken and it's just a total mess. So that's really important. I'd quickly create WhatsApp groups, put the right people on there, and just have an open discussion and see what's needed. So that's my opinion on it and how I approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to note that, you know, obviously, like, maybe not obviously, a lot of our customers at Learn Stage Lighting at Learn Stage Lighting Gear, oh, we should talk about that in a few minutes, are not doing this for customers or for clients. But the fact remains, like, once you get on site to do an install or, you know, set up something for an event or whatever, you know, there is a clock typically ticking to when the start time of this thing is, right? So anything that you can do ahead of time, you know, pre-addressing fixtures, pre-setting the modes, labeling, making sure you know what cable lengths you want to use in what places, et cetera. Any of that stuff that you can get out of the way ahead of time and not have to figure out on site means that you have space in your mind and in your day to run into things that you didn't see coming when it comes to the actual setup for the event. And, you know, sometimes that means that you go to set up for an event, and this has happened to me many times, where you have a really good plan, you have all the stuff picked out, you're ready to go on terms of addressing things, having them set up, et cetera, and then your day just goes really smoothly and you have a smooth, stress-free day. And there's no problem having a smooth, stress-free day.
In my line of work, and I think in with Learn Stage Lighting as well, we work a lot with uneducated people in the lighting industry where they have no knowledge, no idea, specifically with clients where they've got these ideas or expectations, but they don't necessarily have the budget, or you physically just can't do this. We can't make lights brown or black. And that's something I've been asked multiple times of making a light brown or doing something that is just not achievable. And I think that's very important to also, they need to know the limitations of that. And if you can, something that I always try and do is, especially with theater, is try and make sure you can attend rehearsals. And if you can, record the rehearsals so you can go home, watch through them at your own pace, and maybe prepare your show file with some presets or positions or some, just make some headway, because I can 99% confirm that there will be errors on site, and you won't have the amount of time you want to prepare your show file on site. So try and do as much as you can from home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think a lighting plot on larger scales and on theater is a nice to have and a cool thing to do, and especially on larger shows. For me, I personally haven't worked with blots a lot because I haven't really done that scale of shows. But we've actually had a customer a while back that was quite good on drawing lighting plots and paint, which was quite interesting. And it was really, really good, actually. But if you can, and if you have the know-how, I don't necessarily think it has to be drawn to scale, but that's something really helpful for you as well as the people on site to have on hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be all official, just some sort of, you know, when you're not setting it all up by yourself, some sort of drawing that's clear and makes sense that communicates to whoever's setting it up where the things go, what the things are, and you know, what addresses and things like that there are, so that as much as possible, you're removing yourself from having to constantly tell them stuff, you know, because that just creates a bottleneck that slows down the setup every time.
A lot of people just think they can just go into something and do it. I think with a busking style event, that's cool. But preparing beforehand, I do a lot of band stuff and theater stuff. So what I would do is, if I don't know the act, I would go listen to their music, write down some ideas or some powerful moments and songs. So you can remember this on the day. And that really ticks a lot of boxes with the artist management and with the client. If you can do cool stuff that is in sync with the musician, because a lot of people get that wrong. They think you can just turn on the lights and it's going to be cool. But we are here to illustrate our ideas through color and brightness. And we need to take notes of them somehow and write them down and remember them and also learn from other people. I've learned so much from David himself and a lot of other designers and programmers of how they do stuff. I think a lot of people in this industry are very proud where they don't want to take advice or knowledge from someone else, but it's so great just to be humble and to see what other people do and see what they do good, and you can learn from them, and I've done that.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think, you know, to your point, there are many, many examples in my life, but when I was just thinking of one, that it's like when you do something well and you make the lighting match the music and the content of the performance, it's what makes you make lighting special, right? Like it's the thing that really adds to a performance. I was just thinking of last fall, I did this church service. It was, you know, production company that I work for hired us because this church was doing, it was like a multi-campus church, but they were doing a service with everybody. So they rented an arena at a Christian university locally, and we were there. And this was a church that, you know, I could tell when I first met the leadership and stuff, and then I talked to their tech people, they didn't typically use haze, but we had haze on the show. They didn't typically use moving lights at all. They just had LEDs with some color and stuff in their typical services, and they didn't do a lot with them. And so I could definitely sense, you know, like from their tech people, yes, they wanted to do more, but from their leadership, they were scared of it, right? Like, because they said, we don't want this to be something that's not tasteful. Like, they didn't know how to word that, but that was, you know, their end goal. And by the end of the services, they were just really thrilled with the outcome, where, you know, there was haze, lights were moving, but everything I did and that I made sure I did was in tune with what was coming off the stage and what visuals their video people were sending out. And so the fact that they were really skittish about, you know, things like moving lights, haze, like churches get sometimes, was completely appropriate. But once we were able to show them, you know, first in the rehearsals and then through the actual service, like, hey, no, we can do this stuff really tastefully and it's really going to add to what you're doing. They loved it, right? And that's just a great example of how that works.
I think also adding to that is what is so important for me as well is if there's AV guys on site and you're not doing the AV yourself, is to be in sync with them and in tune with them. And if you don't work together often, between the two teams, you need to decide who's going to follow who, because it doesn't, there's no point in working against each other because you've downloaded this super cool video from YouTube that you want to put on the screen, but it's got nothing to do with the music or with the lighting. So I think that's such a great example where it's really important to be in sync with the AV. And I think another important thing is that I forget a lot, and I think everyone in the industry does, is to have fun and just enjoy yourself. And sometimes just sit back and just say, this looks really great, or it was really fun working with these people, or this event was cool, or that. It's really important just to sometimes have fun. And this is something David hammers on very hard in the Christmas lighting industry, is to try and incorporate friends or family and just have fun with your Christmas lighting display. And I think it's so relevant in the stage lighting industry. And I know this industry sucks people up very quickly because it's a very tough industry mentally and physically. But I think we can try and win it by just having fun and just being yourself and trying to make a difference where you go, and not trying to be an unpleasant person on each site. Just try and make a difference where you go, even if it's just one person a show. That's important.
Yeah, I love that. Awesome. Very cool.
On execution, more in the church lighting realm, as we see often that people don't want haze, and we get often told that haze affects their throats or their chest. I thought of that while you were talking about the church thing, but what's your opinion on haze machines with smoke machines affecting your chest or your asthma or whatever it may be?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, what we're going to point you to is that Broadway and OSHA here in the U.S., which is the Occupational Safety and Health, whatever, the United States, you know, official people. I'm totally killing that. But in the U.S., you know, there was a formal study done a number of years ago. And in the U.K., the National Institute of Health did a very similar study, studying the effects of haze and specific types of haze on Broadway performances, in the case of the U.S. one, on, you know, the actors and actresses. And essentially, I mean, you can read into it however you want. And I encourage you, if this comes up, you know, go read it. But you know, the way I interpret it, because it is a full scientific paper, so it's a little wordy, but the way that it comes across to me, and I think to most, actually, I know to most people, and I'll share that in a minute, is that essentially any quality haze machine that has, you know, fluids that are approved by Broadway, or, you know, just, I mean, you can go and buy really cheap fluids from like the party store and those, you know, the Spirit of Halloween or whatever. And that's there. They may not be good, but any reputable machine on the market, it really is safe. It doesn't cause issues with asthma, and any issues someone might feel, like if they're like really drinking it in heavy, are going to go away after a short period of time. But you know, pretty much what that report says, when I read it at least, is, and this is a disclaimer, we're not saying anything official, is that, you know, as long as it's a machine that's safe, that's from a reputable brand, all that, and there is an approved list from Broadway that you can look at, there's not any health issues, and any issues that it causes anyone is kind of in their head. And I say that because that, of course, is my interpretation of the report. But I know I had a buddy of mine who was an audio guy a few years ago. He did a corporate show, and the band Cheap Trick came to play, and somebody complained about it. And the production manager on that show actually was part of this study that happened on Broadway. Okay, he was part of the study, and he had a printed copy that he carried with him in his bag, and he just handed it to the person and said, read this, you're wrong. And so, you know, but again, so it doesn't have any health issues. If anybody comes up with that, it's usually in their head, pretty much always, from what I understand from those reports. But if you're in an organization like a church, you still have to deal with these things on a personal level with these people, help them to understand it, work with them. A lot of times, honestly, I noticed that if the haze looks cloudy, like if you pump a big cloud of it or something, that's when you get complaints. Whereas if you get it in the room beforehand and it's had time to disperse and it's nice and even, you typically don't get complaints because people think it's smoke or whatever when it looks cloudy. But anywho, I think that pretty much answers it. You can go look up the reports if you're interested. But I think JP is now moving us over to the talking about gear segment, which is awesome. Before we do that, actually, on the way to that, one thing you guys are going to see, faithful listeners of the podcast and everything else, is that, you know, you may have heard or seen around here the brand Above AVL, which is basically the corporate name of our company. And, you know, just to give you guys in the loop, we've included it on all our sites. And Learn Stage Lighting Gear over the long haul is actually going to transition to be Above AVL. And the biggest reason for that is just that we're more than just lighting. And so we're audio and video and can help people with any of that stuff and keep picking up more and more brands where we can be more and more helpful to people, even some that are not listed on the site yet. And so that transition is going to happen over a long time, but you'll see it, and you'll see it in the videos, you'll see it in the podcast. We may even end up renaming this podcast at some point. But Above AVL, it's just us. It's nobody different. Nothing funny's happening. It's the same people doing the same stuff, just trying to give a little bit broader name to what we're doing. So go.
So I've seen this video on one of our local Facebook groups from Martin Professional. So they've got something cooking in the oven. I've got a sneaky suspicion I know what it is.
I have more than a sneaky suspicion because I was told by, well, I can't say who, what it is.
So I really don't know what it is. I think I know what it is. But if you guys haven't seen this video out, Martin, their caption says, "The legend evolves and the shadows whisper of a new brilliance on the horizon." So I think we could have stopped at "the legend evolves." I think that should give it away. So it's either a Viper or it's a Mac 2K revised. But yeah, I see David there with his sneaky little smile. So I'm not going to talk about that any longer.
We're not going to talk about that. I do know. and that's okay. But yeah, it's exciting. Honestly, like as a brand, like we're going to become dealers for Martin. We haven't pulled the trigger yet, but it's going to happen pretty soon. They're one of those that was on top of the game for a number of years. Some things happened where they had gotten acquired by Samsung and some other stuff around the time of the pandemic where they kind of dropped and they weren't the king of the industry that they once were. But now they've retained a lot of their, a number of their key people in research and development. They're doing smart things and I feel like they're coming back and they're going to be a big name in the industry again. And so they've had, you know, like, at LDI this past year, they released a fixture called the Mac One, which is really cool. It's just a tight, fast, super lightweight little wash/beam fixture with a cool lens effect. That is not all that expensive, honestly. Like it's really in line with, sort of the, DJ level brands that we sell a lot of and are wonderful brands. It just, you know, really cuts through well and does some really cool stuff, in that and is not, you know, overly expensive. And so I think that's a really cool one as well that just shows that, you know, they were definitely lagging behind some other people for a while. But they're really coming back and putting out, you know, what Martin has always been known for in this industry, which is essentially putting out things that are really smart, really well thought out. And that, you know, when you see a fixture that's on the Mac line, it's really well built and it's something that they're going to keep around for a long time and is going to do a really good job. And so, yeah, it's a really cool fixture and I can't wait to do some more with it.
So the Mac One you were talking about, we actually talked about it last week as well, but that's got B3 video mapping, which is cool. It's got 200 built-in macros and it just weighs 10 pounds.
Yeah, it only weighs 10 pounds. Like that is like nuts, and it's tiny. Like, it's really small.
And it's got lime. So yeah, you can do some really cool color mixing there. So it's RGBL.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, it's this interesting fixture in that, like, you can use it on pretty big stages and it's a cool tight beam with this cool lens effect. But you could also use it on a smaller stage just as a stage wash.
Yes. Like, it's 2,500 lumens output.
Yeah.
So it's bad. It's really not bad.
Well, exactly. This is your daily reminder that in terms of output and numbers and stuff, that when you go with a brand like Martin that is a higher tier brand, you know, you do have to look at the brightness in perspective, because you know, looking at it and saying, "Oh, it's an 120 watt light," you might not think it's very bright, but 2,500 lumens is actually quite a bit. And especially at the narrower end of the range, it's really well focused. Meaning that, like, you might look at it beside another fixture that's like 3,000 lumens, and that fixture has like a really soft edge and like a lot of fairly extraneous light kind of out on the edges. Like, this one has some softness to the edge at different zoom ranges that you like, but then it really ends like really quickly, so that all of that light is within the main part of the beam. And so it definitely punches higher than it looks on paper, which is really key.
Yeah, obviously the new fixture that's coming out in March, the 14th of March. So that will be in Frankfurt by Messe. I'm not sure how you say that. Messe, Frankfurt, something like that. And the Light and Building trade show. Martin has always been quite innovative with the type of fixtures they bring out. For instance, the Mac 1 is a really good example of that, because it's something vastly different from, I think, their direct competitors. It's similar, but not really similar. So I think they used to be really innovative, and no pun intended, but I think they've switched their light back on.
Oh, pun 100% intended.
So I hope to see some great things coming from them. They've really been rock stars in this industry in the past. I still remember the days of Mac 2Ks and Vipers. I'm quite excited about this little journey.
Well, and the crazy thing about Mac 2Ks. Okay, so what year did Mac 2Ks come out? So they came out. Okay, here we go. I've got their discontinued date. Okay, 13 plus years. So the year 2000. Okay, so they came out in the year 2000, maybe a little bit earlier. The crazy thing about that is that, like, I had somebody from another manufacturer point this out to me recently. They said that, and that makes sense, actually, that it's from the year 2000 and they called it the 2000. Like, the 2000 is the, what is it? Is it the lumens? I don't know. I don't think it's the watts. No, because it was a 1200 watt. But anywho, so maybe it was the year 2000. But regardless, like, you know, somebody from another manufacturer pointed this out to me recently. They were like, "Hey, you know, you sometimes think that all these like large churches in the US have like these huge budgets and all these new lights." He's like, "When really half of them are still using like Mac 2000s, you know, and making them work and fixing them up." And, you know, give me another, like, we love all of our manufacturers, and a lot of them since that time in the year 2000 have, you know, improved a lot in terms of their quality level. But, like, you know, what other brands do you see a fixture that was built in the year 2000 that's still being used on stages in church, right? Like, in these churches and in other places, like, you just don't see that. And that does speak to how well built the Mac fixtures from Martin are.
Were Martin not originally the first CMY color mixing fixtures, or was that from someone else?
Oh, that's correct. I believe Verilight maybe was first, because there used to be like a patent, and I don't know if there is anymore, where they like patented CMY or the name, because you would notice that all the other manufacturers would call it like CYM on their specs. And I think it was Verilight, but I'm not 100% sure.
Do you know of any other fixtures coming out that you've seen around, something cool that you know about that you can share?
Oh, not that I can share. No, not that I can share. You know, that's the beauty of, you know, having grown, wearing stage lighting gear, which is now going to be above AVL coming in the future, is that, you know, we get to talk to manufacturers a lot, and it's a cool place to kind of be a seat at the table. And they tell me things sometimes, but I can't say those things to you, to these people here. There's always cool stuff coming out. And certainly, like, whenever, if I know there's something coming really soon from a brand and somebody's quoting something similar, like, I always try to tell them, like, hey, like, you know, wait a week or two, because we might see a new product come out that might be really interesting to you. But in terms of on the podcast, yeah, we can't say that.
Okay. No, I thought maybe you saw something floating around on Facebook or something that you know about that will be launched soon. And I think while we're on the topic of fixtures, we had a short video about this a while ago where we talked about the sheds fixtures, which we're not sure if we call it sheds or sheds because the spelling is quite interesting. So not directly aimed at them, but once again, back at what David said, is how reliable stuff like the 2Ks and the Vipers and fixtures like those were. Do you think the cheaper brands or more Chinese, more knockoff brands are getting better? Do you think it's wise to invest into Chinese fixtures or direct import fixtures rather than buying a Roby or Klepecki or Martin fixture? And what's your opinion on that?
Well, we've talked about this a lot in the past, and I mean, it's a long, hard, you know, thing to unwrap. Like, essentially, you know, there's going to be a million different levels between something really high end and something that's direct from factory. And so that's really key. But, like, you know, the biggest thing, like, at the first level, like, say you go with, you know, just, like, there are brands that we love and have that are, you know, like Gamma, for example. Gamma is a great example of an awesome brand that brings us great fixtures. And the difference between Gamma a lot of times and a direct from factory is you're going to see higher quality components. You're going to see, and then the other parts are just the fact that, hey, you have someone in the US who's paying attention to the quality, who's taking really great care of you, okay, et cetera. And the fact that, you know, with factory direct, and I've seen this happen 1,000 times to people, is, you know, sometimes people get fixtures and, you know, a year into it, they're starting to have some problems. And then they start to go reach back out to the factory and they just kind of get ignored or blacklisted or whatever. Like, when someone's completely out of the US, there's not squat you can do to resolve your issue from that person or from that factory. And that's a really big issue. You know, as you move up the chain more and more, like somebody like Gamma, just to be, you know, 100% blunt, we love them and they make great fixtures. There's someone who doesn't do a lot of customization or research and development on those fixtures. Okay. As you start to move up into, like, you know, the ADJs and the Latians and Chavez, then, you're still getting a great quality fixture, but they're spending a little more time fine-tuning the fixtures, getting them customized to their exact needs, you know, adjusting things on the research and development side. And so, you know, you're going to pay a little more when you get there, but you might or might not get something that is a little more efficient, a little better tuned, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it kind of depends on what it is, et cetera. And then when you move up to that very top level, the top tier brands, you know, at that point, you've got the best manufacturing, the highest quality pieces, and they're typically spending way more effort in the research and development to make sure that things are, you know, as efficient as they can be. And, you know, when you open a feature on a fixture, you know, like zoom or like, you know, a color coming in or a gobo, like when you get to those top tier brands, just how nice the light looks when it comes out is just, you know, just 10, 20, 30% better than when you're at a lower brand. And when you go, just to bring it home, because I got to get going in a second, when you go like Chinese direct from a direct from factory, it's like a lot of times you get really poor quality optics. The quality and the amount of time these things work before they break is going to be a lot less. And so, you know, you're going to be surprised sometimes how bright they're not, and how that might compare to something from a US brand. And then, you know, if anything breaks, if you have any problem whatsoever, you're just not going to have anybody that's responsive a lot of the time. You know, brands like that, you can look on Facebook. There's tons of people who have had issues. And then I think the last thing, too, is that when you go with a brand, the thing that factories do a lot, and that our brands here on the US have to work hard to deal with, is they will try to switch things out for cheaper components, and they will do it behind your back, okay? They will change little things like DMX modes or the way certain features work inside a light or whatever, and they will flat out try to get that by you and make it so that you don't notice that they changed something about that light. But if you had fixtures previously and you order more, now you've got two sets of fixtures that are slightly different and don't match up right. Okay. That's what factories do. They do it all day long. And I have, I can't say who, but somebody one time said, hey, you know, somebody that works for a manufacturer told me, hey, you know, if these factories were 100% honest all the time and they always gave you what you wanted and they kept things consistent and they didn't blacklist you when you had an issue, he's like, we wouldn't have jobs here at these US manufacturers. But the fact is, like, these brands that have a US presence, or wherever you are in the world, they do work hard for their money. And they're not, like, some people like think they're like, oh, they're just overinflating everything. They're just taking a ton of money home for themselves. Like, they're not. I'm just telling you that, like they're not, like, there's, if you want to get rich, there's better businesses to be in than a lighting manufacturer. You can make a reasonable living, no doubt, but sometimes people think the margins and the amount of money these people are making is like way, way higher than it really is.
For me, the most important thing is support. You are nowhere now phoning your friend in China when your fixtures are bombing out on a show, where I'm specifically going to talk about Lone Stage Lighting Gear. I was up till past two this morning sorting out a client, and we will walk the extra mile with you to get you sorted.
That's it. I'm out of here. I gotta run to the bathroom. See you later.
Awesome. Cheers, man. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
So that's it from us for today, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to see you again soon for a new episode with some more great topics.
Thank you for listening to the What's Happening in Stage Lighting podcast. If you're interested in purchasing any gear, please visit our Stage Lighting store at learnstagelightinggear.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please listen to our other episodes on Apple, Spotify, or Google podcast platforms. Don't forget to grab our free beginner's guide to stage lighting on learnstagelighting.com. Learn Stage Lighting, helping you create great lighting.